Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steyr Mark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. Also, don't forget to check out our contest section on our website to submit your information for our free monthly giveaways. For more information, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com/contests. On today's show, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, attracting pollinators. People all over the world are very concerned about the globally declining pollinator population, which has been proven has been caused by pesticides. To help provide safe foraging, there are specific types of plants and flowers that you can incorporate into your garden, which will not only attract pollinators, but you can also use some of these plants for culinary use, as well as for fresh cut flowers all summer long. Now, it's critical that we help these populations to grow. Now, while it also may seem easy, there should be some careful consideration as far as what plants you select and which ones to avoid. So joining me today is America's favorite consulting rosarian, Susan Fox. Good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon, June. Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be with you this afternoon.
I love talking to you. If I had a grandmother, I would want her to be just like you. You represent rose royalty to me. Talking to you, it's like you never get bored. And especially with all of your knowledge, I learn something new every time. So I'm so happy that you had the time to come on the show today. And I know that from the emails and correspondence from our listeners, a lot of people really feel the same way. So, you know, it's great to have you back, Susan.
Thank you so much, June. What a lovely thing to say. And I can't think of anything that I'd rather talk about. And it's the perfect time to be talking about roses and flowers that attract pollinators to our garden.
Yes. And right now in the Northeast, it's spring, but it isn't really that warm. And I just want to mention this one little thing that kind of bugs me when it comes to landscaping. A lot of people are in a rush to clean their leaves and get rid of everything so that they can start the whole new growing season with a fresh, clean slate. And the thing is that there are a lot of butterflies that have overwintered in the leaves, that they're nesting in those leaves. And if you're going to do anything, try to leave them as long as you can until they emerge. Right now, especially in this area, in the New York area, there really isn't anything that's blooming out. People do have, I think maybe you might find a couple of random daffodils and tulips, but there really isn't a lot that's out there for the pollinators. So if you could just leave the leaves from last fall just a little while longer. I know that it's not the most attractive thing, but it really will make a difference. So just wanted to mention that really quickly. How is the weather by you, Susan? Is it warming up?
You know, the weather is very cool and very mild, a term that I like to describe it. It's just a beautiful, soft sort of days that we have. And also, let's remind everyone that at this time of year, I like to start taking out the plants that I've had protected in our garages or our greenhouses, but we want to keep an eye on those outside temperatures because we think that just a frost or cooling temperatures will freeze our plants, but tropicals like mandevillas, they can only endure temperatures down to 45 or 50. So if you, like I, have been able to help keep those tropicals alive over the winter, then you wouldn't it be terrible to finally take them out? You know, you've had them survive over the winter and then take them out, and then in one cool night below 50, and then you lose them. So be sure and keep an eye on those nighttime temperatures, and be sure and bring them back in or protect them, because it's been cooling, warming up during the day, but then dropping down pretty radically in the evening. How about out there by you on the East Coast?
Yeah, it has the same. But you know something? I used to think that the East Coast, when the temperatures increased over here, that it obviously had to be warm throughout the rest of the country. And it's interesting, talking to my good friend Tom Theobald, who hosts the Neonicotinoid View with me on Thursdays, I find it really interesting this past winter that they had temperatures in the 70s when we were getting hit with a blizzard. I just couldn't get over it. I mean, the weather is just so out of control. And what is also kind of amusing to me is I have a fig tree that I bring in every year, and the leaves, it's got full-size leaves on it, and it's just dying to get outside, but it's too cold. I actually don't think I'm going to bring my fig tree out until probably mid-May, maybe even Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day weekend is usually when I bring out any of the tropicals that I have in the house. The temperatures have just fluctuated way too much, and I just don't like to take any chances. I've had situations in the past where I had a hibiscus, and unfortunately, I brought it out too soon, and I killed it. And exactly what you said before, Susan, you take care of this plant all winter long, and then you bring it out, and then bam. So it's kind of better to be safe than sorry.
It's very – that these plants are very expensive. When you look at what these tropicals, especially when they're large, like we are able to grow them over the summer, and you put an investment like that, and then you heat a garage or whatever type of winter protection, you manage to keep it alive all winter. I have a fern, you know, it's not the cost of the plant. It's a $9.99 fern that I brought from Dallas. I couldn't keep a fern alive through the winter in Dallas, but I brought it from Illinois, and I have a $9.99 fern from the grocery store alive since I left Texas, and it's a matter of, I don't know, pride, something, but I still have this fern. And do you know that these little sparrows, I put that fern outside because ferns can take some cooler temperatures, and I put the fern under the eaves, and do you know that these same little sparrows are back there making their nest? And isn't there something amazing about birds that come back and have babies in your fern when you can see them right out the window? So it's just wonderful and magical to have those plants that you bring in and take out, and they survive, and you don't want to lose them because you just don't keep an eye on the temperature, and it drops way down below freezing. So I just want to remind everyone that we can get busy in the evenings, forget that we've taken those plants outside, and then the temperatures drop. So please check your temperatures before you go to bed at night. I put on my robe the other night, went running outside, and had to drag in the mandevilla because, you know, that's been alive for several seasons. So just we want to remind everybody of that.
You brought up a very important point, which is to also do something as far as nesting. You know, it's one thing to have plants that will attract the pollinators, but also to provide some sort of nesting. I think that's also very important.
It's, you know, if you have little children, we have grandchildren now, but if you can share with your little children in the neighborhood or grandchildren or just anybody, yourselves, baby birds. We had baby doves born in these ferns, and you watch them. I learned things I never knew, that doves managed to keep their babies completely silent. And then they taught their babies how to look for food in the bushes and not make a sound. I mean, there are things that you can teach your children about nature that you just never knew. If birds manage to come make their nests in your ferns and in your flower pots. And, you know, baby rabbits having their babies, as much as I go on about not liking rabbits because they chew down.
Yeah, you get free fertilizer.
My roses.
You get free fertilizer. Don't complain.
No, but I go on because they chew down the canes and the roses. But then, right while I'm complaining about them, they have their babies in my potted miniature roses.
Oh, so. Yeah, you have a picture of that on gagasgarden.com. Yeah, that's adorable. But you know, it
nature.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, nature is just amazing, and we can teach ourselves and our children to love it with the plants around us.
That is very true, and it's a shame that people can't teach their kids to be silent as they're foraging, but that's besides the point. sorry, folks. In any event, getting back to the top today's topic, Susan, what are some of the herbs that you grow each year, some of the perennials as well as annuals?
Well, I was just so blessed. My daughter-in-law had really tried a lot of herbs and started giving me potted, some of the potted herbs that I wanted to, you know, a kitchen garden, some of the plants that I wanted to thyme and some of the, what is the herb that we break off and we serve with tomatoes and
basil?
Mozzarella cheese? Basil.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just love it. And you know, there's no comparison until you have a fresh herb kitchen garden. You know, you can buy it fresh at the finest stores, but it doesn't taste the same. So I started just with the potted herbs, and then I've just gone on with several of fresh herbs like that that I've been, I just love them. They taste wonderful. They add so much to, because that's one of my favorite fresh salad is to take fresh mozzarella and fresh tomatoes that I've grown and basil. And I just don't think there's anything better than the balsamic vinegar. Do you? I mean, I just really enjoy that. And I think once you've grown fresh fresh herbs like that, you'll just never go back. And I did really try to grow garlic, and it's not that hard, but and I've grown, I know fresh onion isn't really an herb, and radishes, and we'll get into that, but I on my way to planting a rose garden, I decided you couldn't eat roses, and I planted many more fresh vegetables, but that's another topic for another day. So
now, it's very interesting. According to the University of Sussex, which is home to my favorite professor, Dr. Dave Goulson, marjoram was probably the best all-rounder, which attracts honeybees, bumblebees, other bees, hoverflies, and also butterflies. So that's a really great herb to grow. Interestingly enough, a lot of people don't recognize the dandelion as being an herb, but it is. And I actually have received a number of requests for dandelion seeds. There are people who don't have dandelions in whatever part of the world that they grow in, and they're asking me if I could send them some of the seeds
really?
From my dandelions. And dandelions are actually one of the first flowers that the bees forage on. And I have a whole field of dandelions. I love dandelions. I actually eat the flowers. The way that I harvest them is I will pick them. And it is a little bit of work to pick them, but you have to pick them on a sunny day. If it's raining, the dandelions close up. The flower is not blooming. You have to pick them on a sunny day. I prefer to pick them in the late morning. This way you don't get that morning dew on them. And then what I do is, like, I'll sit there and I'll just sit on the grass and I'll just pick them all around me and I'll just keep moving. And then what I do is I take a salad spinner. I wash them 3 times and then I put them in the salad spinner. And it not only gets them dry, but if there are any little refugees that are hiding out in the dandelion, the bloom itself, it's a great way not to ingest any additional unexpected protein, if you know what I mean. So that's what I do. And there are a lot of different ways to prepare them. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll just dry them in my dehydrator, and then I'll steep them in a tea, or I will make like a batter, a really easy batter. You can make it with pancake mix. You could do whatever you want, and you can make a fritter out of it. And those are they're very good to freeze. They taste fantastic. But I will caution you, they are diuretic, so you will urinate if you consume a great quantity of them. You will be running to the bathroom a little bit. But the leaves, the dandelion leaves, are just absolutely delicious depending upon how you prepare them. I think a lot of people they'll try dandelions when the leaves are mature and they're tough and they're very bitter. But dandelions, if you pick the young leaves, like you would spinach, if you pick the mature leaf, it's going to be very chewy and very tough. But the same thing with the dandelion. If you pick the young leaves, they're really delicious. And you can either toss them in a salad, you can use them if you're juicing, or you could just eat them as is. And they're just fabulous. But that is an herb that is a very important friend to the bees.
That's so interesting. And do you know, June, when you brought back such a wonderful memory, when we were little and we had so many dandelions, we used to, do you remember making the dandelion necklace when you were
a
little
kid? Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And then also, you also reminded me, and I can't wait to share this, because my daughter wanted to find the perfect flower to put around her swimming pool. And it's funny, and it's really funny, actually. So she put lavender around the swimming pool. And if you want to keep away neighborhood children, be sure to put lavender around your swimming pool, because they are the biggest bee attractant I have ever seen. I want to repeat, I have been around roses and they attract bees constantly, and I have never been stung by a bee. I accidentally ran into a wasp at my son's front door, but I've never been stung by a bee. And the bees swarmed all around the swimming pool, because I've never seen as many bees as these lavender attracted all around the swimming pool. And I just thought it was a little bit funny that was the flower that she chose to put around the swimming pool. So I don't know, have you ever seen how many bees that lavender attracts? Because it really attracts just swarms of bees, and they don't bother anyone. But I wouldn't say that's the best flower to put around your swimming pool if you have people who are afraid of bees, and I really don't know why they are, because bees really don't bother anybody.
Well, the scent of lavender is incredible, but yeah, lavenders of various colors have proven to be highly attractive to insects. Mm-hmm. So that might not be something that you want to plant around the swimming pool, but you know, it really depends upon what you're looking to grow. I mean, for me, I have the front of my property as well as the back of my property. Everything's functional. And maybe that just goes back to the days growing up on a farm, but I don't know, I'm not really a big fan of lawn. Maybe it's just that I hate cutting the lawn. I don't know what it is, but I try to make things as functional as possible. And it's interesting, I once did an interview with Irene Virag, who, if you're a New Yorker, you'll be very familiar with her. She is an award-winning journalist. She used to write the column for New York Newsday about horticulture, and she actually took her front yard and created this herb garden out of it, and it was just spectacular, and she kind of started a trend, and the woman is just so amazing. But in any event, getting back to the herbs, I actually grow sage around the perimeter of my property. I don't know why I decided to do that, but let me tell you something. I use sage all throughout the year. I don't just use it for Thanksgiving.
Good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And what I do, like for example, I just made gnocchi for Easter, and I make I use a vegan spread with the sage, and it's incredible as a sauce for pasta. And you know, when you have that fresh sage, it's there's nothing like it. And it's not as overpowering as you would think. But once again, it's an herb that is great for attracting pollinators, but it also smells great. And then you have people that will burn sage to clean out the house, so to speak, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, I love sage. Plus, it's a perennial, so.
I love it, too. And, you know, you reminded me, I was in a garden center, and I walked by a huge plant, and I thought, what is that smell? It was aromatic. It was beautiful. It was haunting. And I saw this plant, June, and I'd never seen anything like it. And I asked the garden center manager, I said, I've never seen anything like this plant. What is it? And I found out what it was, and I bought it, and I still have this plant here. I bought it. You know, we packed up the back of the pickup. We looked just like the Beverly Hillbillies because we put great big, my sweet husband put great big containers around these plants, but we brought it. It's a giant citronella plant. I didn't know what citronella looked like, but I knew that citronella candles don't work. I just want your listeners to take note. A candle doesn't work anything like the plant. The plant will fill your garden with an aroma that is so heavenly. And when you walk by it, you brush the leaves with your hand. You just brush it vigorously. It's very hardy. You brush the leaves like crazy. And then take your hand and that fills the air. And it does work.
I don't burn paraffin candles. Allergies, well, number one. Number two, most citronella candles are made with paraffin, and the paraffin actually pollutes the air. That's why I tell people, if you're going to burn candles, burn the beeswax candles. Beeswax candles actually burn, they purify the air, but also the light that's produced by a beeswax candle is the purest form of light next to the sun.
That's wonderful information. And if you get yourself some of these plant companies, I saw it today, I won't name the name, but it's sold as a mosquito plant. So write this down, folks. A mosquito plant or citronella, and it grows really large, but then just it gets big, and you just brush the leaves vigorously with your hands, and your hands will smell heavenly. And then take your hands and rub it on your legs, and no mosquito will come near you. And it smells beautiful. But the candles don't work for me, but the plant works heavenly. My whole backyard and my patio area, no mosquitoes came around. And this really, folks, it works. The citronella plant, or what a lot of plant, and you can buy them small where the plant costs, you know, a dollar or two. And I don't know, I haven't started it from seed. Because I don't know what a citronella plant seed looks like, but you can buy this mosquito plant in a, you know, like a little tiny, for a dollar or two, and then grow it yourself, and then bring it in the garage or wherever you're going to keep it. And what an amazing plant that is, June, and it's aromatic and heavenly, and I haven't seen it flower as far as a pollinator, but isn't that wonderful if you can keep away mosquitoes that might cause any bad bacteria or, you know, things like that. Anyway, I just thought you want to know about that.
Thank you. Well, there are a number of herbs that are aromatic that are beneficial in that way, but some of the other plants that I'd like to talk about, because we are running out of time. And by the way, folks, these lists will be available in the companion article to this interview, which will be posted on theorganicview.com. There are so many flowers that will attract everything from hummingbirds to just different types of birds. Depending upon the area that you're located in, it's amazing how the native plants really play their part. And if you want to find out what native plants are indigenous to your area, you can always contact your local cooperative extension if you're located in the United States. In Europe, your local ag school, I'm sure, has a list. But the native plants really are important because this is not only healthy for the soil, but the indigenous species that are there, this is what they're used to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, there are some species that can be considered invasive. For example, black-eyed Susans, Rebecca. I happen to love them, but apparently they are considered to be invasive. And I happen to like them because they're easy for me to grow. And when you see a field of black-eyed Susans, they're tremendous. And I have tons of mason bees and bumblebees all summer long. And then usually towards the fall, that's when they start getting kind of like a little bit of powdery mildew on them. And then I wind up just cutting them back after the after they've really died down quite a lot. But the black-eyed Susans are just tremendous. Also, echinacea. Echinacea is not only a great herb, but it's a great nectar source for for bees as well as butterflies. So mm-hmm. that's also a perennial. And I know my sister bought echinacea at a garden center. It was the end of the season, and she was surprised that she was able to buy so much of it. And she really has a great green thumb, and she was able to really bring these plants back to health, and now they're thriving. Now she has such a beautiful display in her garden. So that's something also that you should consider.
I actually have a picture of an echinacea with a picture of a bee on it, because they are a great attractant for pollinators, aren't they, June? Echinacea?
Yeah, echinacea is tremendous. I have a number of pictures with bumblebees on echinacea. Mm-hmm. And I know a number of people, what they'll do is when they deadhead the echinacea, they'll just leave the flowers for the birds to eat, the seeds. So, it depends upon what you're looking to do. But, yeah, it's an absolutely beautiful flower. I want to just talk briefly about another flower that happens to be a personal favorite of mine, and that's the dahlia. Mm-hmm. Dahlias, the open-flowered dahlias, are very attractive to all sorts of bees. I have a number of pictures that I've taken throughout last year's growing season, and we'll be posting them on the website. And the actual link for all the pictures is http://quotes.theorganicview.com/dahlias. And you can see all my dahlia pictures. But my favorite type of dahlia to plant is the collarettes. Basically, the collarettes are amazing for attracting bees. The one that I planted last year that received a lot of attention from the bees was called Poo. And it's just a stunning looking dahlia. And the thing is that all summer long, you can cut dahlias and there's still plenty for the bees. It's just amazing. Susan, really quickly, can you just name a couple of your favorite roses? Because we're running out of time.
It's a Floribunda. There are several Floribundas that I notice really attract bees, and they're Kimberlina. I notice the purples and the yellows, and this light pink Kimberlina really attracts bees. And the purple climber, Stormy Weather. But many people don't think of roses as such an attractant to bees, but yellows really attract bees. So those are just a couple for a thought. Kimberlina, Stormy Weather, some of the light yellows. Just keep that in mind when you're picking out roses. But they really do attract. They're a great attractant for bees.
Well, this has really been a lot of fun talking to you about plants and flowers that attract pollinators, but unfortunately we're out of time. This just went really fast, didn't it, Susan?
Oh, We could talk all day. We've said that before, June. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And folks, don't forget the companion article for this interview will be available on theorganicview.com. And we also have a contest this month in which if you send us your feedback about the show, you could be eligible to win a number of awesome prizes that are listed on theorganicview.com. So thanks for tuning in and have a great afternoon, everyone.